Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Herman, you've recently talked on the show about the proposed No Race Laws Bill that us at the Institute of Race Relations are proposing. Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly this is?
Yeah, so over the last few months, we really have become focused on this idea of taking policy proposals to the next step, giving it more concrete, you know, flesh and bones to enter the battle of ideas. Because in the think tank world, it is quite sometimes odd. We are busy with very abstract things. We are in favor of some ideas and against some other ideas. And over many years, sort of, we've experimented with various ways of how to make these ideas more concrete. And a few years ago, our colleague Anthea Jeffrey wrote this alternative expropriation bill. And that really just sort of triggered this idea of committing to this form of advocacy and saying, look, we don't have to stay in the abstract lane. We can make it more concrete. And we can use these bills, these pieces of alternative legislation, to introduce ideas to the public in a more concrete, tangible, understandable, and defined way. But also, we can use these bills to challenge opponents of good ideas and just challenge Parliament, challenge political parties, challenge the vested interests and say, look, you keep on asking us, if not BEE, then what? If not NHI, then what? If not expropriation without compensation, then what? And this is the IRR's answer of, okay, if not BEE, then the No More Race Laws Bill. And there are a few more bills coming down the pipeline that I'm quite excited about, and hopefully we'll get to talk about those. But the No More Race Laws one really was born from this idea that fundamentally, the South African state has no authority to classify the South African population by race. One of the cornerstone laws of apartheid was the Population Registration Act, published and passed in 1950. And what it allowed the apartheid state to do was to define essentially when someone is white, when someone is black. And I found this topical briefing from the Institute of Race Relations dated 31st of August, 1985, SAIRR topical briefing, What is Apartheid? And it sort of introduces some stuff, but then when it moves on to sort of what are the basic apartheid laws and terminology, law number one, Population Registration Act of 1950. And let me read to you what our colleagues from 1985 wrote. This law provides for the classification of the entire population of South Africa according to certain defined racial categories and subdivisions thereof, the main ones being African, Cape Colored, Asian, and white. The Act lays down that appearance or general acceptance by the community may be taken into account in classifying people where there is doubt as to which group they officially belong to. It also provides for reclassification in certain circumstances of appeal. So the Population Registration Act essentially introduced the nonsense of the pencil test. If your hair texture is a certain way, if your facial bone structure is a certain way, that was indicative of this race or that race. So it was really the number one cornerstone law of apartheid. But it was repealed in 1991. So since 1991, technically, legally, statutorily speaking, the South African state has not had any law that empowers or enables racial classification. And why I distinguish between empowers and enables is empowers is it doesn't have the right. It has no law saying we can do this. And it doesn't enable because it doesn't have a definition legally of what a black person is or what a white person is. At least the Population Registration Act, for all its insanity and for all its relation to the Nuremberg laws for defining when someone was ein Juden, we don't really currently have anything on the books that officially tells you when you are white, when you are black, when you are Asian, Indian, or colored. But that hasn't stopped the government from pretending that this repealed ability to classify by race can still implicitly function and operate in the background, because we see laws like the Employment Equity Act or the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act that defines Black people as if it is an accepted category. And mind you, those laws, those acts, they don't actually define someone is Black if. They just say Black sort of means African, Asian, Indian, colored. But the problem is that's a terribly circular definition, because what does it mean to be African? What does it mean to be Asian, Indian, and colored? For those definitions to kick in, you need the Population Registration Act. So the ANC has been getting away with this perverse zombification of the Population Registration Act, and the No More Race Laws Bill calls that out head on. In its preamble, I wrote in its short, long title, and in the text itself, I just make, you know, sort of, I make the argument based on 100 years of work from the IRR that, legally speaking, this entire idea of race classification, the basis of race-based policy, is a nonsense. There's nothing there. The emperor has no clothes. And the exciting thing about it is it's really a good argument, because it's so knocked down true. We can quibble about how BEE was supposed to work and corruption and whether corruption is endemic to the system. What there's absolutely no room for quibble about is the fact that the Population Registration Act was repealed. And this is why we have been having an immensely fun week challenging Parliament, saying, look, if you want race-based laws, bring back this cornerstone law of apartheid. If you're not willing to do that, let's scrap the race-based laws. It's been a fun week. We've gotten some good media coverage. We're seeing the petition numbers tick upwards. People are subscribing to the What Essay Can Be pledge based on this. Yeah, I'm excited for this. This isn't going to be a quick campaign or a quick win, but it is going to be, I think, a very, very fun instrument to use to expose the racial hypocrisy that has been left unchallenged for 30-odd years.
So, Herman, many people who are defenders of BE, of the status quo, they'll say, okay, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. This is all technical, legal things. This is just a funny loophole you found. But what's really going on here is that it's important to consider race in fixing the problems in the past. They'll say the discrimination in the past was based on race, and therefore the redress towards that discrimination needs to also be based on race. What's your reply to that?
Well, that doesn't get them around essentially advocating for the return of the Population Registration Act. And perhaps they're willing to swallow that pill. Perhaps they're willing to say, because the Population Registration Act racial classification was the problem, we need to bring it back to solve the problems it caused. Good luck. That's bold. That's brave. I'm glad I'm not in their shoes to argue for that. But what's also useful is that BEE is now more than 20 years old. I think it's time to, as the Afrikaans rugby commentator once said in English, looks at the scoreboard. It is time to look at the scoreboard. Black unemployment, higher than it was 20 years ago. Black youth unemployment, higher than it was 20 years ago. South Africa's overall unemployment, higher than it was 20 years ago. Inequality between the richest Black South Africans and the poorest Black South Africans, higher than it was 20 years ago. If we're going to pretend that BEE or BBBE, broad-based Black economic empowerment, let's assess that. Is it broad? No, it's incredibly narrow. It's not based. It's incredibly woke. Is it Black? No, because it has empowered white folks in the corporate elite, cater elite sector as much as white as Black folks. It's really entrenching that the architects of poverty that Muleti Mbeki wrote about in 2009, the rent-seeking class. So it's not broad, it's not based, it's not Black, it's not empowering, perhaps it's economic, but in a terribly stupid sense. So if they are fine with the Population Registration Act being zombified and brought back into law, whether explicitly or implicitly, we can move on to the fact that looking at the scoreboard does not support this idea that what we've been doing has worked. And in fact, as BEE has been intensified, the negative consequences of BEE have intensified, and none of the mythical promises have been fulfilled. And perhaps a thing to note is we free marketeers often get accused of being in favor of trickle-down economics, which is a nonsense, because we're not saying, you know, make the top people economically free. We're saying make everyone economically free, especially the worst off, because economic freedom will benefit them the most. But BEE is perhaps the ultimate form of trickle-down economics. It is based on this idea that if you empower a few black millionaires to become billionaires, if a few people in Johannesburg or Cape Town or Durban suddenly become filthy rich, the logic in BEE is that the poverty in Khayelitsha and in Shoshanguve will suddenly be less worse. And that's
exactly
just
bogus. This is an implicit assumption of so many of these racial laws, is that people are just like in these little racial cliques and they only will defend themselves. In other words, the assumption is that white people will never hire a black person for any sort of reason except to exploit them, and black people are the only ones who will be willing to help or employ or economically work with black South Africans. But even the work we've done back in the sort of 80s and 90s shows that this is not true. Even before apartheid was repealed on the books, it was beginning to collapse because South Africans economically were seeking each other out. There were people breaking the color bar rules. There was, you know, more and more economic integration and all these things. The past laws were disintegrating. The whole system was collapsing because at the end of the day, South Africans need each other to survive and thrive. And the idea that everyone is just going to sort of circle the wagons around their little pot of gold is actually ridiculous. And it's proved to be ridiculous by the reality of our actual lived experience.
And if you look at the amazing work done by Walter E. Williams in his book, South Africa's Apartheid's War on Capitalism, then you pick up how desperate in the 70s and early 80s, South African industry, white-owned South African industry, was for getting more labor on board. To such an extent that the government continuously had to turn up the screws of labor legislation to increasingly prevent the hiring of black workers, because these black white-owned businesses, many of them probably supporters of apartheid, of the National Party, possibly some of them intensely racist, I don't know, I can't say. But even they couldn't wish away the gravity of economic reality. If you want to get more workers, to expand your manufacturing ability as a business, to expand your service delivery as a business, you must find labor. You must find labor that is affordable and willing to work for you. If you can appoint, if there are 10 people waiting outside your office that you can appoint, and the law says 7 of those you can't appoint, and the 3 of those you can appoint might be bad investments because they are made synthetically more expensive compared to the others, the pressures are there to start pushing the boundary. So even in the 70s and 80s, the heyday of, you know, Rubicon apartheidism, where it was doubling down, where you had Foster through Tubuta just going, yes, apartheid is the thing we are here for. White businesses tried to break the law and find loopholes in the law, even then, to hire black people, not out of some wonderful source of non-racialism, possibly that, but also just because economic reality demanded it. And that's the thing that is so fundamentally mistaken about this idea that if you make a black person there rich, a few black people over there feel less poor. It was the same nonsense that drove the economic reality to, at the end of the day, turn business against apartheid. And I think we are at the early stages of BEE becoming on the receiving end of that same sort of dissatisfaction of economic reality.
Right. The truth is, the enemy of South Africans is not each other, is in fact poverty. And that is the demon that we need to slay and conquer. So, Herman, a comment that sometimes gets made about us sort of think tank people is they say, well, okay, look, you know, fair enough. I agree with this piece of legislation or whatever. I think you're doing a good thing here. But what's the point? The ANC is never going to adopt this. This is, you know, it's never going to pass through Parliament. No one's going to adopt your bill. This is just all fluff. This is just a media talking point. What do you say to that?
I would say three things. Number one is let's have some historical humility. Let us appreciate that in August 1985, P.W. Botha delivered the Rubicon speech, doubling down on apartheid. Less than 10 years later, in May-June 1995, South Africa hosts the Rugby World Cup. At that final, Nelson Mandela, the newly elected black president, the public enemy number one, less than 10 years earlier, walks onto the Ellis Park Green with 40,000 white Afrikaner men chanting Nelson, 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 less than 10 years. For some context, 10 years ago is 2015. That feels relatively recent to my mind. So if we think that if on the 16th of August, 1985, someone had said, oh, apartheid is never gonna fall. PW has just doubled down. We're in the period of states of emergencies, the townships are aflame, the army, the police are gearing up for a sustained guerrilla campaign. If you had said less than 10 years from now, a white South African Springbok captain is going to lead South Africa, a democratic, a non-racial democratic South Africa to win the William Webb Ellis Trophy, and Nelson Mandela will be president, and walk onto that field to adulation from a predominantly white rugby public, people would have said you're insane. So let's have some historical humility for the fact that change, like Hemingway says of bankruptcy, happens slowly and then all of a sudden. The second point I would make is that we've already had a few MPs asking, when can we introduce this bill to Parliament? And I've had to ask them to just turn it back a bit. We don't want to yet go to Parliament. We want to build a societal coalition around this. We don't just want to tackle this thing as a purely legislative route. The way I see it, the most important Parliament in South Africa is the public. And we need to get this bill through the public mind. And that's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But the work we've started has been so promising in terms of the reaction being really positive across the board. So already there are people going, oh, let's get this to Parliament. And I have to just pull the brakes a bit and say, look, let's first, we need to move slower. We need to build a societal coalition around this. And the third point is that I know of municipalities, prominent municipalities in South Africa, that are rolling out very similar policy at this stage in terms of no more race-based hiring and procurement. So we are seeing a sea change, but what people should understand about when we say the tide is turning in the English language, what we mean is not that the waves were coming in very suddenly and now they're retreating suddenly. The tide turns slowly, but it turns incrementally. But when it turns, it turns. You can't reverse a tide that has turned. And that is really the sort of mindset we must be in here. We are seeing these small dominoes fall. We are seeing Fikile Mbalula getting called out for the nonsense of just playing the card of racial transformation. For better or ill, we have seen American attention focused on race-based policies for the first time since Reagan was in office. We are seeing dissatisfaction with race-based hiring persisting in the polling. We are seeing parliamentarians open to a new set of ideas, and we are seeing local governments, provincial governments, actively starting to explore how we can move beyond this. We are seeing Chief Justice Zondo, former Chief Justice Zondo, making the point that BEE premiums allowed state capture and corruption to ride absolutely recklessly over the suffering of South Africans. And we have seen a Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana, almost stubbornly and against his own better judgment, admit to the IRR that government departments have the right to have merit and non-race-based procurement policies, value for money procurement. The tide, ladies and gentlemen, is turning, and we're asking you to join us in turning that tide. We're not promising this is a Dragon Ball Z episode where everything will flash, 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 and there'll be a victory. This is a tide turning, and it is a proud moment, is a promising moment. It's not a guaranteed victory, but to those people who say, oh, it'll never happen, I would say a bit of historical humility, a bit of reality about where we're at in terms of the political situation, and a bit of honesty that a turning tide is a tide that turns slowly but inevitably, and we might just be at that point.
So if someone is interested in the No More Race Laws bill and wants to join this, as you say, civic coalition against it, how can they do so?
I would urge them to Google IRR, No More Race Laws. It'll take you to the page on our website where you can sign the petition. A link to the law, the text of the law, is on that petition page. And follow us on social media, on X and on Facebook, where we are breaking down this law, making the choice clear, putting the arguments out there. And we've been in this game, Nick, you and I, for 5-6 years. Not a lifetime, but a few years. We know how it feels and how it looks when something of a change represents or manifests itself. And I think that is happening. The content we are putting out there in terms of social media is really getting great engagement. Our news media appearances on this getting great engagement. Our behind-the-scenes engagements with members of parliament getting great engagement. I met with a legal advisor to a government just yesterday, and they are on board with this sort of policy. It feels really, really good. And what makes it more than a feeling is the fact that South Africans, by a margin of at least 2-1, think merit, not melanin, should be the basis of our country's hiring practices, who think that procurement should be based on value for money, not value for skin color. And I'm excited to see things align in a very unique and constructive way. And it is chaotic at the moment. You look at politics, you look at the geopolitical situation, it is chaotic. But what I always tell people is change only comes from chaos. You only get a new establishment of facts if the old ones are shaken a bit. So yes, we are being shaken, but that's the perfect time to influence where the dice fall.
All right. And with that, that's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.